Books on Tape presents Confidence, How Winning and Losing Streaks Begin and End by Rosabeth Moss Cantor. Read by Carrington McDuffie. Preface. My son thinks I wrote this book so I would finally know enough about sports to swap stories and watch ball games together. My corporate clients and senior executive audiences think I wrote it to give them a roadmap for how to get to the top and stay there, especially if they need to turn around unproductive cycles to get in shape for high performance and growth. My civic and nonprofit boards think I wrote it to help them manage through turbulent times and develop strong community leadership. My Harvard colleagues think I wrote the book to weave my past work on innovation and change into a new theory of organizational cycles and dynamics. My MBA students think I wrote it to make lessons about teamwork in business more interesting by drawing from the best sports teams. My husband thinks I wrote it so I would learn how to persevere even when the roof crumbles over me, which it did because of the unfortunate timing of renovations. There is truth in all these professional and personal reasons for writing Confidence, but if I think back on what I had in mind at the beginning, my first goal was empowerment. I wanted to give more people the tools and the confidence to avoid the destructive patterns of losing streaks and get onto winning paths. Whether they are executives concerned with business strategy, managers and employees looking for ways to foster teamwork and a creative work environment, coaches and fans cheering their favorite teams to victory, professionals interested in success trajectories, or community activists seeking to improve the quality of life at home. I wanted to understand confidence in order to spread it. The mission of Harvard Business School, where I work, is to educate leaders who make a difference in the world. I get to spend time with people in the highest circles of business and government and advise them. For example, I was one of a handful of American experts invited to the economic summits of both President Clinton in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1992 and President Bush in Waco, Texas in 2002. But my students these days are not interested just in business per se. They might wind up being business consultants by day and nonprofit volunteers by night, or working to develop better leadership for public schools, or heading organizations to improve health care or make a dent in global poverty. I believe in leadership to make a difference at all levels, so I help social entrepreneurs create new grassroots organizations to change the world corner by corner. Among other boards, I have served for a decade on the National Board of City Year, the model for AmeriCorps, which mobilizes young people in teams to perform a year of national and community service in schools, community centers, or wherever they are needed. So when I decided to write this book, I wanted it to be relevant across a wide spectrum and apply not just to corporate cultures and business turnarounds, such as Gillette's, but also to all the institutions that we must turn around to make the world a safer, saner place, and to make our lives more fulfilling. In addition to going inside a wide range of organizations in several countries, I focus a portion of the book on sports. I chose this area not just for its intrinsic interest, I am a big fan myself, but also for widely applicable lessons from the great or faltering teams I examined. Among the great ones, I am pleased to say, are two tremendous women's teams. Sports is a near universal source of metaphors for leadership and management because it is a good microcosm for examining patterns of winning and losing and seeing the elements of exceptional leadership and teamwork. I know that everyone who loves sports will resonate immediately with the stories I have drawn from that realm and will see immediately the applicability to other areas. But one does not have to be passionate or even knowledgeable about sports to understand the relevance of the stories I tell about success, setbacks, and turnarounds in many walks of life. Ultimately, the lessons I draw are all about people and how they work together, or don't, to produce better or worse results. These truths about people and the systems that surround them hold across all sorts of games, whether they are simple ball games, complex business situations, community problems, or the personal game of life. Rosabeth Moss Cantor, Boston, Cambridge, and Edgartown, Massachusetts, March 1, 2004. Part 1. Winners and Losers: How Confidence Grows or Erodes. Chapter 1. The Locker Room and the Playing Field: Booms, Busts, Streaks, and Cycles. Sometimes it seems as if there are only two states of being, boom or bust. When things are up, it feels as if they will always be up. People come to believe they can succeed at anything they try. Companies proffer grand visions of innovative futures, and investment is easy to attract. When things are down, it seems as if they will always be down. That's how depressed people feel. That's why recession-dominated economies find recovery elusive. That's why teams or businesses or schools can stay in decade-long slumps. Any company, any group, any person can be swept along by one of these fortunate or unfortunate cycles. What causes them to rise or to fall is often a matter of confidence. Confidence is the bridge connecting expectations and performance, investment and results. It is a familiar term used every day to indicate future prospects in a wide variety of circumstances. The self-confidence of athletes, consumer confidence in the economy, public confidence in leaders, or votes of no confidence at board meetings. But there is remarkably little understanding of what lies behind it. Consider the following dramatic examples and the questions they raise about how confidence builds or erodes. The women's basketball team at the University of Connecticut consistently broke records, winning 10 Big East Conference championships and chalking up a 70-game winning streak. For the 2002-2003 season, the individual talent level of the team was well below that of its predecessors and many of its opponents, yet the team of valiant women continued to rack up victories. They were confident that they could win, even without the very best players. Why? Although its competitors canceled hundreds of flights and lost millions of dollars during America's Great Blackout of August 2003, Continental Airlines kept flying and even made money, despite power outages at its Newark and Cleveland hubs. Within minutes after the Northeast electric power grid went down, employees were on cell phones sharing ideas about dealing with the crisis. Far from losing money and passenger goodwill, Continental increased both, exceeding forecasts by $4 million for the 2 days following the blackout. The company's employees had confidence in one another that enabled them to spring into action as a team. Where did it come from? The Philadelphia Eagles were roundly booed by fans for picking rookie quarterback Donovan McNabb over a more highly rated running back who was seen as a better athlete. The mayor of Philadelphia even introduced a city council resolution urging the other choice. Recruiting players such as McNabb for character, not just for raw athleticism, gave the once mediocre Eagles the confidence to bounce back from losses and win more regular season games from 2000 to 2003 than any other professional football franchise. The New England Patriots were even better at converting character into championships. In terms of individual ability, quarterback Tom Brady was not considered the best in the National Football League, yet through strength of character, he led his team to 2 Super Bowl wins in 3 years and an almost unprecedented 15-game winning streak in 2003. What was the connection between character, team culture, and top performance? After one of the highest-performing decades in its 100-year history, Gillette, the global consumer products company, slipped badly in the mid-1990s. Poor business practices and overpromising to Wall Street resulted in 15 quarters of missed earnings estimates before a new leader turned the company around and restored accountability. Gillette once had confidence, then lost it, then got it back. Why did they fall into a circle of doom in the first place, and how did they break out of it? At De La Salle High School in Concord, California, successive generations of student athletes won every single football game for over 12 years.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?